Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, Larry Mehler. And on the phone with me now is Wisconsin's own Renaissance man, Michael Perry. He's a best-selling author, a humorist, musician, radio host, first responder, intermittent pig farmer, and now playwright. His latest book is called Danger, Man Working, Writing from the Heart, the Gut, and the Poison Ivy Patch. And his new play is based on his book, Population 485. Does Michael's work resonate with you? I hope you'll join in the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And you can also post a question or comment on our Facebook page, The Larry Mehler Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Michael Perry, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, it's always nice to talk with you. I like you dedicated the book to your to Miss Grant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my high school typing teacher. She was the business teacher, really, I suppose, was what they called it back then. But I remember I took a typing class. I think it was my senior year, perhaps it was junior year. And I remember thinking, well, this will be an easy way to just fill a credit or a half credit, whatever it was. And I went in with a pretty bad attitude, and she taught me to type in spite of myself. And, of course, I never dreamed that years later I would wake up every day and make a living by typing. So, yeah, I dedicated the book. It's coming out with Wisconsin Historical Society Press shortly, and I dedicated it to her because the book, Danger, Man, Working, is just a collection of freelance writing pieces, essays, articles, all over the map. And it's a reflection of what it is to be a working freelance writer and taking the work as it is offered. And none of it would happen if Miss Grant hadn't taught me how to type. So.
There you go. Well, I took to typing in my senior year because I think my girlfriend was in the class along, and I was one of two boys in the class. And that, that appealed to me greatly. And I think I took it for one semester, and the teacher said, you should take something else next semester. Because I didn't, but I learned. I learned how to type, and believe me, it's I've lived with it my whole life. Well, I really have enjoyed reading your book, Man at Work. I sometimes wonder, as I read your pieces, I sometimes wonder, would you rather be doing hard labor, something else, or am I just missing? I mean, you enjoy that.
I do enjoy physical labor, but you can so quickly over-glamorize it. It's one thing, like I just recently spent a day out cutting trails and running the chainsaw and using the tractor and sweating in the sun, and I very much enjoy that because it gives me time to think. And I also was raised in an environment where work didn't count unless you could stack the product, and stack of books really didn't count. And so, yes, in many ways, I'm still deeply attracted to the idea of physical labor because to me that was equated with worth. But as I said, over time, it's been tempered by the fact that it's also very easy to be very condescending about that and glamorize hard physical labor when, in fact, I know people who have given their bodies to their careers. And so I try to be careful not to get into that whole over-romanticization of the idea of hard work. And then I also, as we've discussed many times, I stumbled into this writing thing. I never saw it coming. And I love what I do, and I'm grateful to be able to do it. So, no, at the end of the day, I love to write, and I think one of the points of the book, Danger, Man, Working, is that one of my greatest privileges is it's not in telling my story, it's in being trusted to tell the story of others. And in many cases, those are folks who do conduct physical labor.
Yeah, actually, I think you say you want to focus less on the position. You want to get away from the pitchfork handle, focus less on the position and the paycheck and more on the drive and the need.
Oh, wow. See, sometimes I forget what I write and I'm surprised. Like, I don't know who said that. He sounds a little smarter than me, actually, that guy. But yeah, I think there's this whole idea that you need to be respectful of folks' labor and what they do in their craft. But you also want to be careful of saying, oh, gosh, you know, the farming life, the fresh air. and the frozen manure spreader at 9 a.m. on any given Sunday morning in January. And, if anything, I just hope I can convey some sense of people's stories when I'm given the opportunity to write it.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Mary in Pewaukee. Mary, I thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind today?
Well, I am just honored again to be able to say hello to Mr. Perry, and just to let people know that aren't familiar with his writing that I think we have just about all of your books. And my last one that I purchased, thanks to WPR, I heard that he was in Oconomowoc last year, and I met you, Michael. And you signed Roughneck Grace for me, and I told you I was on the phone with you, and I gave you a story of my chickens, and I don't know if you got a kick out of that, if you even read it. But this man, to all of your listeners, is just so humble and down to earth and just writes with such a funny satire way. I don't know. It's hard to describe, but if you haven't tried reading any of his stories, they're all true. They're all so endearing. And you make so much fun of yourself, and I guess that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, where I come from, I learned, coming from blue-collar folks and loggers and truckers and farmers, and it's good to take yourself down a peg because life is going to do it eventually. So sometimes it's the preemptive thing. Although, you know, that's interesting. The self-deprecation thing can be overdone, and I have overdone it. And I have another book coming out in November. It's about Montaigne, the French philosopher, and it's called Montaigne in Barn Boots. And it's just my take on reading this French philosopher often while I'm sitting in my deer stand. And I have a little passage in there about self-deprecation. A friend of mine called me out on it one time because someone came up and said, oh, we really love your music and the books. And I did something about, oh, you know, I don't know how it happened, and I'm just a knucklehead. And he took me aside later, and he said, you know, humility is good, and self-deprecation is important. But he said, you also have to remember sometimes when someone says that your work is meaningful to them, the correct answer is thank you. Because if you overdo the whole boot scuffing thing, you're actually kind of insulting them in that they've taken the time to tell you that something is meaningful, and you're telling them that it's really not a big deal. And so I'm working on that, and I think the Montaigne book that's coming out in November, too, it's interesting. I'm at the point where I've written enough books that I'm starting to write some that not everybody loves, and you have to understand that if you write long enough, you can't always keep everybody happy. And in the Montaigne book, I'm writing about some things I've never written about. And part of me is excited because it's a new direction, but part of me also is a little trepidatious because I thought, well, am I going to lose readers over this? But at the end, I do try to write humbly and just do my best to convey my heart and hope that maybe folks will follow.
Yeah.
Well, it's just lovely. It's a privilege, too, I was just reminded in Mary's call, it's just such a privilege to be able to do this and to be able to meet people on my little mini tours around Wisconsin and just say thank you face-to-face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mary, thank you so much. Appreciate your call very much. Michael Perry, our guest today, he is the author of a new book. It's called Danger, Man Working, Writing from the Heart, the Gut, and the Poison Ivy Patch. Join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You've kind of got your book, well, not kind of, you have your book sort of broken up into three areas, if I'm not mistaken, Men Among Men, Alive, Dead, and In Between, and Faith and Music. Why did you choose those?
Well, I think even in the introduction of the book, and I'm, by the way, I'm on the road traveling with family, so I'm not looking at a copy of my own book at the moment, so I'm doing my best to remember it. I believe in the very introduction of the book, I talk about the fact that those divisions are arbitrary, that, you know, you have to find some way to sort things. But this is a collection of disparate pieces, and it, as I use the phrase, it's doing the work as the work is offered. And so it opens with one of the favorite pieces I've done in a decade.
It's a fascinating piece.
Yeah, I climbed Mount Rainier beside two veterans who had both been severely injured in the Iraq War, and that story is not about me, it is about them. But, you know, I go from talking about trying to climb Mount Rainier with these veterans to then a story about musky fishing, and then a story about the physiology of puking. And when you're a freelancer, you take the work as it is offered. Well, then at some point when you compile them in a collection, you have to find a way to sort them. And the editors at Wisconsin Historical Society Press, who's bringing the book out, were real helpful in that, and we did our best to sort it. But in the end, you end up being a little bit arbitrary with those things. But the faith in music part was fun, because over the years I've done a lot of writing about music and a lot of freelance writing about musicians and life on the road. And then also, I was raised, and we've talked about this before, and I've written about it in my other books, that I was raised a fundamentalist Christian in an obscure sect, and my journey has been somewhat away from that, but it's always a part of me. And when music and faith, or the search for faith, intersect, I think there's opportunity for some pretty wonderful stuff. And if I have a wheelhouse, that's it. I love writing about the intersection of music and faith.
Yeah, I and you do a wonderful job of it as well. I want to go back to that first story in your book, because I liked it a lot. And I wondered if you must have been on the climb.
Yes, I had to. I mean, sometimes I speak to writing groups and they're like, what does it take to be a writer? And of course, that answer is 10 years long. But one of the things I tell them that you might never think about if you decide to be a freelance writer is, here I am, a flat-footed farm boy from flatland, you know, the northern part of Wisconsin, where at least the farm I grew up on was very flat. It was just swamps and trees and a few alfalfa fields. And I'm sitting at my desk one day, and the phone rings, and it's an editor from Backpacker Magazine, and he says, with almost no preface whatsoever, could you climb Mount Rainier?
Hold that thought for just a minute, Michael. We need to take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back, and Michael's going to finish that story, and we'll take some calls as well. Stay with us. Talking today with Wisconsin author and humorist Michael Perry. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Michael is the author of many books, including Truck, A Love Story, Population 485. He also hosts Tensho Radio. His latest book is Danger, Man Working, Writing from the Heart, the Gut, and the Poison Ivy Patch. And in just a few days, he'll be appearing in a new play based on his book, Population 485. So we'll talk about that as well. What about questions from you? How important is hard work in your life? What questions do you have for Michael? Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And Sue in Thiensville, we'll get to you in just a minute, so hang in there. I want to go back to the story that we were talking about before our news break, Michael, when Backpacker Magazine called and said, hey, do you want to climb Mount Rainier?
Yeah, and so they said, could you climb Mount Rainier? And, of course, as a self-employed freelance writer, I said, well, of course I can. And then I hung up the phone. And then the guy said, well, can you do it in 3 weeks, 3 weeks from now? And I said, oh, yeah, no problem. And then I hung up the phone, and I went into the house, and my wife verified this, and I changed into my running clothes, and I went and found the biggest hills I could find. And every day for the next 3 weeks, I ran those hills, because I knew that in order to tell the story, I had to be fit enough to get to the top of Mount Rainier. And but ultimately, as I said, sometimes you don't anticipate that writing will require you to be in shape. But also, that story, if you read it, there's nary a mention of me. It wasn't about me, and it was one of those where I was privileged to accompany these men and do my best to convey their story.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Ed Salou, is that how you pronounce his?
Yes, Salou, I believe, was how he pronounced it. Yeah, Ed Salou, and yeah.
Scott I've forgotten the other guy's name now off the top of my head. Scott?
Yeah, Scotty, and they were both just guys who paid a terrific price for their service and to climb beside them. And, you know, one of the things I tell people, I didn't call them ahead of time and ask them a bunch of questions. I just met them, and we started up the mountain. And when we came off the mountain, we had the story.
Yeah, it's a fascinating read. And I've read, it was really fun for me to, in a way, reread some of the stories that you wrote in and have included in your book. It was, I'd forgotten or many parts of them. And so it was really a treat for me to have a chance to reread many of the stories you tell.
Yeah, and going through and editing them and compiling them, it was the same for me to rediscover some of the. I've always said, especially when I speak to young people about writing, that for me, writing has been a means to an adventure. I've been able to do things that I'm not qualified to do, go places I normally wouldn't go, and hang out with people who normally wouldn't want to hang out with me. this book is testament to that.
Well, let's go to Sue in Thiensville now. Sue, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling to recommend Jesus Cow, which I bought at the Edgerton Book Festival some years ago, and that's actually fiction, but of course it's true life. We Sconnies recognize the place and situation. As a native Wisconsinite, I was living in Oregon. I've driven to the top of Mount Rainier, as far as you can drive, but I was very homesick because it's not like home. And I was gifted with your Population 485 by a friend, and it was just such a wonderful homesick therapy for people who are living elsewhere.
Oh, how nice.
Wisconsin, so fondly.
Well, go ahead,
lovely.
Michael.
Yeah, that's lovely to hear, because Population 485, I just simply wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that book. And one of the things I love about that is I get these phone calls. Someone will say, well, I'm from Wisconsin and I was living elsewhere, and that book really helped bring me back home. I also get people who moved to Wisconsin, and they say, some friends gave us this book to teach us how to live in Wisconsin. But the other thing that I love about that book is, like right now, I happen to be in Nashville, Tennessee, and I can go to a town and tell stories from that book, and there are people in the audience. They know the characters. They know the life. Because that really is a book about life in rural America. And I always say, the number on the sign changes and the accent change, but the characters are universal.
Yeah, absolutely. Sue, thank you so much for calling. Lance on Facebook says he found out about your work after moving to Mexico. But what a wonderful revisit to Wisconsin landscapes and characters. He loved Truck and Visiting Tom. And he hopes to read them all.
Oh, wonderful. I hope he does, too. I'm self-employed. Go for it, Lance.
Oh, man. I want to skip over to you meant Population 485 came up, and you have you've written a play based on the book, and you're going to Population 485 on stage at the Stoughton Opera House, which is a wonderful building, on August 18th, 19th, and 20th.
Yes, yeah, Stoughton Opera House, of course, a lot of your listeners will know that's one of the many gorgeous little opera houses in the state of Wisconsin, and I've performed there many times. It's a home away from home, and there's only one issue with the Stoughton Opera House, and that is they did such a good job of preserving it that they also preserved the original wooden seats, which are pretty unforgiving, but very wisely, they, as a fundraiser, I hope I'm not misspeaking, but my understanding is you can rent a cushion and the proceeds go to support the theater, which I've always thought that's a terrific fundraising idea. Here, we'll give you this cushion if you donate a little something. But yeah, we're taking the play there. A few years back, a buddy of mine, he's a musician, a guy named Justin Vernon, has a band called Bon Iver, and he was talking to me one day about Population 485, and he said, man, you should do that for the stage, and you should have some music that goes with it. And so that percolated for about 5 years, and then one day I realized if I don't set it in motion, it's never going to happen. And so I actually booked a theater for the play before I had written it, and then I got to work. And at one point locked myself, courtesy of a group up in Door County, I locked myself in Norbert Bly's chicken coop for 3 days straight. And when I came out, I had the first draft of the script. And so So with some local folks in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, we put together a production of Population 485, and we're taking it on the road here and there. We're going to be in Stoughton for 3 dates, as you said, starting on the 18th and 19th and 20th, and then we're doing a show on August 25th up at the Lake Chautauqua, Lake Superior Big Top Chautauqua, up by Bayfield there.
Yeah.
And then next year we're going to do a couple more shows, Oconomowoc, Oshkosh, and Viroqua. But it's been, it was a real challenge. I'd never done anything like that before, adapting it. And it's been great fun to try to bring the book to life on stage.
And so this is the first time anyone will be seeing it.
We did some shows last year, preview shows. We did it up at the Big Top once last year. And then this year we've done shows in Eau Claire and a couple of, we just did a show out on Washington Island at the Arts Center out there. Yeah. And, but Stoughton is our first big 3-day run in a faraway venue. this is the big time for us.
Well,
I just have a wonderful group of actors and a great director, a guy named Jake Lindgren, who's a local guy who grew up in the country near me, but is also an artisan, and he's just done a great job with it.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it, and Stoughton's not so far away from Madison, so we'll be there to see it. I know Jill Nadeau, my producer, already has her tickets as well, so really looking forward to it. Back to the book, which, by the way, I think you may have mentioned, but it comes out August 15th, I believe.
I think that's when it ships. There's always a little confusion on shipping and it's when it's absolutely available. But if you go to sneezingcow.com and go to there's a store page there, and you can find links to different places to get it. And certainly all your local indie bookstores will have it. And, yeah,
it's really fun, and I always enjoy it. Frankly, I read it online. We were sent an online version because we didn't have a hardcover version.
Sure,
and I read it that way, but I still like reading the book. I like holding a book in my hands, turning the pages.
The e-books. I'm not against e-books at all. I have one myself. An e-reader. They have plateaued. They hit a certain point, and they haven't really increased anymore, whereas regular hard paper book sales have actually started to pick up the pace again a little bit, which is encouraging and interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just something about holding the book. When I went on, I looked at the titles, and I went right away to the muskie fishing because I like to fish muskies, and it's a great story. Tell that story a little bit.
Yeah, they wanted me to do an article on muskie fishing, and even though I grew up fishing and stuff, I think I maybe snagged a muskie by accident once or something, but I'd never been a muskie fisher. And so they sent me out first with a professional, a guy who had his own muskie fishing TV show, and he had this huge, powerful boat and all this electronics and everything. And it was very interesting. It was fascinating to spend 2 days fishing with him and while he filmed his show. And he had all this amazing knowledge. And it really is exciting when, after hours and hours, suddenly the first muskie doesn't even bite, just rolls enough that you can see his back breach the water. And it's very exciting. And then he ended up catching a couple. But then at the end of the story, I just went back to my old neighborhood and I found the old muskie fisher that we all watched growing up. And everyone would whisper, he catches muskie. And he took me fishing, Chuck did, one last time. And I didn't know it at the time, but he had taken ill and would not be with us for long. And he took me out and I caught my first muskie and released it. And that story went from being this very powerful, big-time story about a professional to becoming a very reflective, lovely story that is turned out to be one of my favorites.
Yeah, it is a wonderful, wonderful story. And, another story I liked a lot is, and it's one that I had read before, your story about Amy.
The two dads.
Yeah, the two dads story. There are so many families that are in that situation. I think a lot of people, it would resonate with a lot of people. And I'd read it once before, and it was really nice and fun and interesting to read it again.
I hope so. Yeah, that's as some of the folks who've read my other books would know.
I was a bachelor for 39 years, and then I got married, and my wife was a single mom at the time and had a three-year-old daughter who I always like to say I went from bachelor to dad in under 60 seconds. But her father lives in Colorado, and this piece is about we actually communicate, and we have a very civil and respectful relationship. And so I wrote an essay about what it's like to raise a daughter with two, with another father. And that, too, is one of those where I was a little nervous writing about it. But the more I got into it, the more it turned into a piece that really personally meant a lot to me. And I hope someday my daughter as an adult can read it and see that we did our best, you know.
Yeah, and yeah. The little note postscript at the end, today she really 6 feet tall?
She is 6 feet tall now, yeah, because the story that I tell in the original is that you can have, everything can be lovely and you can all get along, but you still have awkward moments, and the awkward moment there is that I took her when she was a little tyke, I took her to see a play at the theater, at the children's theater, and we're standing there to get our tickets, and she's this little tyke looking up over the counter, and the lady looks down and goes, oh, one for you and one for your daughter, and she just very innocently says, well, he's not my dad. And of course, she's fine about it, but the adults in the room are suddenly very uncomfortable. And so I just remember holding her hand and looking down at her, and now she's 6 feet tall, and I am not.
Oh, Ron emailed to say one of his best buddies is a friend, has from the same tiny town as you. He knows, he knows you changed names and some details to protect the innocent, so to speak, but he says it really fun hearing his friend tell the stories behind the stories.
Yeah, so he's talking about Nauburn, of course, as we call it, New Auburn, Wisconsin. And that's another fascinating thing, what you just said. So I take the idea of nonfiction very much to heart. I do my best to verify the facts. There's no reason to exaggerate or embellish because the stories are terrific as they exist. But even after trying, fact-checking and calling people and doing your best, I'm still always amazed at how perspective works. And my brother, I have a story that I've told for years about a dead cow kicking the farmer next door. And it's this, I've turned it into a 15-minute stem winder that I do at a lot of my live performances. And it's got this wonderful payoff. And then one day, after telling it for years, I made the mistake of telling it in front of my brother, and as soon as I got done, he's like, well, that's not how it happened. It wasn't Holstein, it was a Jersey, and it wasn't me, it was your other brother. And what's fascinating about that is we all know about lying and prevarication and that sort of thing, but here is a case where I had no interest there was no reason for me to change details in the story. And yet we both remember, we both agree that these things happened, but the details we remember are starkly different. And so when you get an email like that, I'm like, yeah, I bet I'd like to hear the story behind the story too.
Oh man, I really was laughing to myself. You have this a story on hiring somebody to do having a handyman to do the handyman job.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking about my own case. Once I was going to put a trailer hitch on my car, and I asked the farmer friend of mine who was across the road from me if I could use his shed. And he was going out in the field to do some field work, and I told him what I was going to do. I went. So he took off, and I drove my car over there, and I got under the car, and I immediately realized that this was not a job for me. I drove straight down to the local mechanic. He put it on, and I drove back, and I parked it in the same place for no reason. I just parked it there. And the farmer, about an hour later, comes back, and I saw him come back, and he drove up. And he stopped his tractor, and he got off the tractor, and he looked underneath the car, and he kind of jumped on the appliance there the hitch that I'd put on, and he came over and he said, "Man, I never thought you would get that done that quickly."
Yeah, it's a double whammy for me because I come again from where our conversation started today. I come from that blue collar stock, very handy people who do good, solid work. And right now I'm visiting a cousin of mine in Tennessee who's an electrician, and he can do all these fundamentally useful and important things. And he's an artist in that regard. And then there's me who, like, the screen door latch will break, and I'll do everything I can to just keep it working for 6 months. And then eventually, I always use the phrase, I got a guy. And in my case, the other thing that's funny is that I do have a guy, but also one of my guys is actually my mother-in-law, who worked for the phone company for years and is very good with wiring and that sort of thing. And so I regularly have my mother-in-law over helping me fix lights and things because, to me, electricity is, it's just dangerous magic. And I should really have nothing to do with it. And so, yeah, that whole idea of hitting a point in your life where you just have to say, you know what, this is just not in my wheelhouse, and I best step aside.
I was saying, we mentioned electricity. I was thinking about getting third place in my 4-H electricity project when I put, because I forgot to put I could have gotten a blue ribbon, but I forgot to put a safety cover on the end of the cord.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm the guy that's always going, now, it's the blue wire to the red. No, wait, was it the white? And at that's the point where you go, yeah, you know what? I really shouldn't be doing this.
Oh, man. Well, you have a lot of a lot of great stories. Let's give Mark a chance to join in. Mark, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hey, just a friendly comment. Just listening to these stories about Wisconsin and Wisconsinites, and I just wanted to share something that would almost fit in with this kind of storytelling. But a little while back, I ended up getting my truck stuck in a real muddy area, and a friend of a friend, the farmer guy, said he could definitely swing by at a moment's notice, but he had no trouble pulling out my truck, but he just had to finish his ham sandwich and he'd be there. I mean, it's the most basic things, and it's so classic, though, and he was there in like 4 minutes, but that was just a big prerequisite, is that he wanted to finish his ham sandwich, so.
Well, and you've just triggered one of my favorite stories, which is, so I come from an area where there's a lot of rural folks, small-town folks, farmer folk, and then we have a lot of lake properties, and so we have what we call the Lakers come up. And they always have things have broken and they want them fixed, and they hire a lot of my local buddies to do this stuff because they're handy and they've got that in their history. But they're also, the lake people can sometimes be a little impatient. And so they'll be calling for the third time saying, when are you going to come and pull the dock out? You see, you said you'd be here Tuesday. I need you to be here. Can you come and do it a little quicker? And what they don't understand is that every time you call the guy to come and pull out your dock, he moves you back down the schedule another day. It's the rural customer service thing where the more you ask me, the longer it's going to take. I told you I'd be there.
You got a favorite story in this, Mike?
You know, I'm not sure if I do, but I will say favorite's always hard for me because everything comes in gradations and depends on the day. But there is a story in there about the singer Greg Brown.
Yeah.
And that story is called Hallelujah Anyway.
Yeah.
And I would say even then, especially lately, that story means a lot to me because Greg Brown was a big influence on me, and I really loved his music. And I'm not speaking of him in the past tense; he's still kicking. but that story and just some of the themes. Greg Brown's father was a preacher. I came from that obscure fundamentalist Christian sect. And both of us have taken paths away from those things, and yet we cherish our upbringing. And just that is, again, that convergence where our conversation started today of faith and music. And even those of us of a questionable, shaky foundation still appreciate and are moved by those things and give them consideration. And that piece allowed me to do that.
Michael, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for tracking me down in Tennessee.
Michael Perry is the author of many books. His latest is Danger Man Working, Writing from the Heart and Gut and the Poison Ivy Patch. It's out on August 15th. go to his website. We have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, so you can go there if you don't find it otherwise. And his play on Population 485 starting on August 18th at the Stoughton Opera House. Thank you all for listening. Stay with us.